Misach Zavid Zara Pergil Mishn Vovin Fil Pergil Mil Mishn Tess. Misha Rabbeis is someone Zavid Zara, somebody whose house was adjacent and right next door a building or a house of Zavid Zara, meaning he shared a wall with a house which is designated for the sake of Zavid Zara. And we're talking both about a case where the house itself next door is served as an Zavid Zara, or even if it's just housing a different idol inside of that building, and that is the idol which is served. Nevertheless, the house in which the idol is in is for the sake of the idol, and therefore it's also forbidden. Be as it may, one of the walls of this Avodah Zarah house, Avodah Zarah building, is also one of your walls. And to make it simple, we're talking about a case where this was not so when the wall was built, or when you moved in, but later on, the next door house became designated for Avodah Zarah. And then the Nofal, this wall which you are sharing, falls down. Also, the Vnoisa, it's forbidden to rebuild it, because you would be doing something for the sake of Avodah Zarah. Kate said, yes, so what should you do exactly? The answer is, Konis Pesach Shaloi Arba Amos, Uvoine, you should rebuild your wall 4 Amos with more to the inside of your house. 4 Amos away from where the Avodah Zarah's house begins. And the Gemara adds that area, you shouldn't just leave, because then you would be expanding the area of the Avodah Zarah house. So they're also doing something for the sake of the Avodah Zarah by giving them more space. So the Gemara says you should fill that area with thorns, and that way they would not benefit. Now what happens if Hoyesh Lev Shel Avodah Zarah, the wall itself was built together by this person and by the people worshipping the Avodah Zarah next door. So the wall itself is jointly owned by both of them. Nidon Mechza al Mechza, it is viewed as being owned half-half, meaning the inner half of the wall closest to his side is viewed as belonging to him. And the 4 Amos begin from where the side of the wall which belongs to the people worshipping Avodah Zarah ends. Say, for example, let's say the wall was 2 Amos thick. That means that he can count one of those Amos of the location where the wall had stood as one of the Amos, and distance it another 3 Amos away from there, and then he could already build the wall over there, because it's 4 Amos away from where the Avodah Zarah's half began. Avon of Eitzel HaAforoi, the stones and the wood and the dust of the wall, I'm going to assume that we're talking about a case where we can no longer tell which part of the wall belonged to the next door neighbors, which part belonged to the Jew, and therefore all of it has the status of something used for Avodah Zarah. And the law is that something which is used for Avodah Zarah, as well as not being able to benefit from it, midrabbanon, it also becomes a source of tumah. Metamin kasheretz. It becomes the same level of a source of tumah as a sheretz. A sheretz is a certain type of small animal. There are 8 of them mentioned in the Torah, that when these small creeping animals are dead, they become sources of tumah. And although there are a number of different ways that things can become tomei, or transfer tumah to other things, a sheretz can only transfer tumah to something else if it comes into contact with it, if it touches it. That's known as tumas mago. So the point of the Mishnah is that the tumah of Avodah Zarah is transferred to something else which touches the Avodah Zarah. Shenemar shaketz shaktzenu, you should surely totally despise it, and it should be disgusting for you. This is talking about Avodah Zarah. But this word shaketz also can be translated to mean a similar idea to a sheretz. And so although this law is midrabbanon, the Mishnah nevertheless brings a posuk as a sort of asmachta. And asmachta is when there is a midrabbanon law, but nevertheless will bring a posuk as a sort of a hint and a way of remembering that midrabbanon law, even though that is not the source for the midrabbanon law, of course. Now there is one difference between the tumah which is transmitted from a sheretz and the tumah which comes from Avodah Zarah, and that is that a much smaller size, a much smaller amount of a sheretz is needed for it to become a source of tumah, whereas when we're talking about Avodah Zarah, it only becomes a source of tumah if it is at least the size of a kazayas. Alright, now Rabbi Akiva says, Kanida, Avodah Zarah becomes a source of tumah like a nida, a woman who has a particular type of tumah, and the major difference between the tumah of a nida and the tumah of a sheretz is that a nida transfers tumah to something else, even by tumas masa. If she carries that item, even without touching it, she will also transfer tumah to that item. Shneim, as the posuk says, this is Rabbi Akiva bringing a hint, a sort of support for his opinion, Tizim kamidova. You should throw them out. It's talking about Avodah Zarah once again. And you should distance the Avodah Zarah like a dova, which refers to a nidah. Say to Milo, go out, you should say to it. So this comparison to Nido teaches us that Madinim Nido Matam Mamasa, just like a Nido makes things Tomei just by carrying them, Avodah Zorah Matam Mamasa, so to Avodah Zorah can make things Tomei if they are carried by the Avodah Zorah, even if they don't actually come into contact. Mishnah Zayin, Shloshah Batim Hein, there are three categories of houses which are used for the sake of Avodah Zorah, like we saw in the previous Mishnah. There are three different categories for the level of prohibition and how easy it is to get rid of that prohibition. Ba'is Shabonim with Chilal Avodah Zorah, number one, a house which was built from the beginning for the sake of being used for Avodah Zorah, Hariz Osor, it is forbidden to benefit from that house even before it's been worshipped. Secondly, Siyadoy V'chiro Avodah Zorah. If something wasn't originally designated for Avodah Zorah, but you decided to change it into something to be designated for Avodah Zorah, and you spread lime on it to clean it, and you added decorations for the sake of Avodah Zorah, the Chidesh, or you added something new to that house, to that building, for the sake of the Avodah Zorah, once again, this becomes forbidden immediately as soon as you've added these things. However, it's quite easy to get rid of the prohibition because no tamash chidesh, all you need to do is take away that which you added onto the building and it will become permitted again. Whereas if it was originally made for the sake of Avodah Zorah, you need to smash down the whole house. Alright, and the third category is Hechnas Lesoich Avodah Zorah. All you did is you brought in an idol into that building. You didn't plan on leaving the idol there on a permanent basis, because then you're effectively designating the building for the sake of the Avodah Zorah. Rather, you pull that idol in on a temporary basis, so all that is needed is Vahitziyah. As soon as you bring it outside of the house, Harizah Mutar, the house would once again be permitted to benefit from. But as long as it's inside, it will be forbidden to benefit from the house, because the house is also serving as a building for the Avodah Zorah to be in. Next, Shalosh Avonim Hein, there are also three categories regarding stones which are worshipped, or which are used for the sake of Avodah Zorah. Firstly, Evan Shachatzava Mitchila Labimos, a stone which was originally quarried. The stone was taken out of the ground originally for the sake of being used as a base for an Avodah Zorah form, for some sort of idol. Haizah Surah, it's forbidden to benefit from that forever. Its entire creation, when it was taken out of the ground and became just a stone, was for the sake of Avodah Zorah. Secondly, if it was originally a regular stone, but Siyadar, he put lime on it, meaning he sort of plastered it, the chira, and he added decorations to Avodah Zorah for the sake of Avodah Zorah, the chidesh, or he added something new to it for the sake of Avodah Zorah, once again it becomes forbidden to benefit from, but Nidamash HaChidesh, to permit it, all he would need to do is to take off that which he added onto the stone, and it would once again revert to being permitted to benefit from that stone. And thirdly, Hemedol Avodah Zorah, if all he did is he placed an idol on a stone, and he started using the stone as a base, as long as he didn't designate it to be used like that on a permanent basis, then all he would need to do is for Silka, if he removes the idol from that stone, Haizam Uteres, then the stone would immediately become permitted once again. And the Mishnah goes on, Shalosh Asheros Hein. There are three types of Asheros, and Asheros is a tree, which has served as Avodah Zorah, although it's not so simple. We'll see in the continuation of this Mishnah what exactly the definition of an Asheros is. But again, there are three categories, Ilon Shenatoil Mitchilol Shem Avodah Zorah. If originally the entire tree was planted for the sake of being used as Avodah Zorah, to worship that tree, then Haizah also it's forbidden to ever have benefit from that tree, even before it's been worshipped. Now, if it was originally planted to be a regular tree, but then Gidda Yofisloi, he cut some of the branches, he removed some of the more wasting away branches on the tree, L'shem Avodah Zorah, in order to designate the rest of it, that which will grow anew for the sake of Avodah Zorah, the Hechlef, and then indeed a new part of the tree grew. L'tumash Hechlef, he needs to take away the new part of the tree which grew, and then it would be permitted again, because the tree intrinsically was not designated for Avodah Zorah. And thirdly, Hemidol Tachtav Avodah Zorah, if he set up underneath the tree an idol, Uvitla. We're actually going to read this word according to a different version of the Mishnah, which says Unatola, that he took it away, he took the idol away from being underneath the tree, then Haizah Mutar, the tree would become permitted again. But as long as the idol is underneath the tree, since that was a general practice to put idols underneath the tree, that was the specific location for the idol to be underneath the tree, so the tree is also considered to be a part of that, and therefore as long as the idol is there, it's forbidden to benefit from the tree as well. Now the Mishnah asks, Ezayashi Eshashera, what is considered to be an Ashera tree? And the point of the Mishnah is to show that this third category of Asherah is actually dependent upon this following argument. According to the Tanakhama, an Asherah tree is kol sheyesh tachtav Avodah Zorah. Any tree which underneath the tree is Avodah Zorah, even there the tree would be considered an Asherah tree, and it would be forbidden to benefit from that tree, just like we had learned until now in the Mishnah. That is the third category. However, Rabbi Shimon says, no, an Asherah tree is only kol sheyesh tachtav Avodah Zorah. any tree where you were, where the people worship the tree itself. And indeed, umaisa b'tzaidon, b'ilon shoy oivdenosai, there was a story which once happened in Tzaidon regarding a tree that certain people were worshipping the tree. Well, they always went to the location of the tree to worship something over there. And at some point, umotsu tacht of gal, they found a pile of stones underneath the tree. And Omar Lahen Rabbi Shimon said to them, bidkus gal es hagal hazeh, you should investigate this, about this pile of stones, to check whether they worship the pile of stones itself, or the kuhu. And indeed they went and investigated, umotsu beitzura, and they found a particular image of an avodah zarah among the stones. So it became clear that they, whenever they went to the tree to worship, serve avodah zarah, they were not worshipping the tree itself, but rather they were worshipping that which was underneath the tree. So Amar Lahen Rabbi Shimon said to the people, hoil v'latzura hinovdin, since the people were always worshipping this image, this form which was underneath the tree, the natal hinas ha'ilan, they're going to permit people to benefit from the tree, because the tree is not considered an asherah tree unless the tree itself is worshipped as avodah zarah. Mishnah Ches, lo yeshev b'tzilo, it is forbidden to sit in the shade, under the shade of an asherah tree. And this is even if the shade of the tree spreads even beyond the actual height of the tree, and we're talking about the shadow. For as long as the shadow spreads, which can be much longer than the tree's height itself, it is forbidden to sit there, because you are benefiting somewhat from the avodah zarah. Vim Yosha, however, if he did sit there, we're talking about a case where he sat in a place where the shadow of the tree reaches, but it's not necessarily underneath the tree's actual shade. Tahar, he would remain pure, because he didn't actually get from the shade of the asherah tree itself. V'lo yavir tachteh, and it is forbidden to pass by, to walk underneath the asherah tree, because again, you're benefiting from the shade. And this time, v'im avar, if he passed underneath the asherah tree, he literally passed underneath the tree itself, then tomeh, he would become tomeh, even though he didn't touch the avodah zarah. And we learned in the previous Mishnah that avodah zarah makes things tomei by touching. Excuse me, two Mishnahs ago, or possibly by carrying. But over here, he did neither of those. However, there is a very large concern that there's some remainder of a sacrifice which was offered up for the avodah zarah underneath the tree somewhere. And sacrifices which were offered up for avodah zarah transfer tumah even by tumas oihel, by being under the same roof as someone else or something else. Just like a dead body has that ability to transfer tumah via tumas oihel by being under the same roof. In the posuk, sacrifices to avodah zarah are called zivchei mesim, sacrifices as it were to the dead. And we learn from there that they have the ability to transfer tumah even by tumas oihel. And because of the concern that there will be sacrifices here underneath the tree somewhere, the person who passed underneath the tree would become tomei as a result of that. Hoisek zel sarabim. What happens if the trees, branches and shade ventured out into a public area, which is technically not allowed, it's forbidden for the owner of the tree to allow that to happen, and now he's sort of preventing people from being able to use that public area properly. So since the entire tumah over here is mejabonon, they were lenient over here, since anyway the avodah zarah is not allowed to be here, so v'avar tachteho, if he passes underneath there, where really he has the right to pass there, and the avodah zarah tree has not got the right to be there, so tahar, he would remain pure. The Zoyun Tachtehaz Yurakis Mesag Shomim, it is permitted to plant vegetables underneath an asherah tree during the winter, because you don't benefit from the shade during the winter. Sunlight is beneficial during the winter. Avalev Mesachama, but you cannot plant vegetables underneath the shade during the summer, because then the shade is a benefit. Chazrin, this is some sort of herb or lettuce type of vegetable. It's forbidden to plant underneath the asherah, lobimais hacham, lobimais hakshomim, both in the summer and in the winter, since the shade is a benefit for it all year round. Rabbi Yosi says, after Yerokim's Mesak Shomim, you're not allowed to plant vegetables underneath there, regular vegetables underneath there, during the winter, because the leaves fall onto them, and over time deteriorate and turn into sort of natural fertilizer, which can actually benefit the ground beneath it, and ultimately benefit the plants which are planted there, the vegetables which are being planted there. So there's also some sort of benefit during the winter as well, and therefore it's forbidden. Whereas the Chachamim say that relatively speaking, it's such a small benefit, and the truth is, the vegetables actually really get damaged if they're blocked from the small sunlight that there is during the winter. So the fact that there's also some sort of benefit is irrelevant, because overall, there is a negative effect on the vegetables. Mishnah Tetz, the Mishnah continues to discuss the laws of benefiting from an asherah tree, and the Mishnah says, not only Menach eats him, if somebody took wood from the tree which had been served as avodah zarah, asher and bahana'ah, of course they are forbidden in benefit, even once they have come off the tree. Hisik bohin is a tanner, if you use that wood to heat up an oven, im chodosh, if it is a new oven which has never yet been baked in before, then yutatz, that oven has to be cut up and destroyed. We're talking about earthenware ovens, and the first time an earthenware oven was heated up, that heat would strengthen the walls of the oven very much, and really the oven, even in the future, is viewed as benefiting from that original heating up the first time, which was in a way completing the creation of the oven. And because of that, you can't even use the oven in the future, because it will always ultimately be benefiting from that asherah wood which was used to heat up the oven the first time, v'im yoshan. But if the oven is old, meaning it has been heated up beforehand already, then yutzan, all you need to do is allow the oven to get cold again before heating it up with other permitted wood, but you would not be able to benefit from the heat produced by the wood of the asherah tree. Also, besapas, what happens if, after heating up the oven with the asherah wood, you then baked bread inside that oven, asur b'hana'ah, the bread would be forbidden to benefit from. Even though in order to produce that bread, to turn the dough into bread, that could not have been done with the firewood alone, we needed the oven as well. Which means that there is more than one thing which is allowing this to happen. This is a halachic concept known as zevo zegoirem, where there'll be a permitted thing and a forbidden thing, which when combined, they produce something else. And the question is that product permitted or forbidden? So according to our Mishnah, it is forbidden, and therefore, even though it wasn't only the asherah wood which allowed for the bread to be baked, it was also together with the oven, and even the heat was greater because it was inside the oven, nevertheless, it is still forbidden, since you are ultimately benefiting from the asherah wood. Furthermore, it's orav achiris, if that bread gets mixed up with other bread, which is permitted, all of the breads will become forbidden to benefit from. Even though in general there's a concept of bittul, where something is nullified, either if the majority of a mixture is permitted, then we might say that all of the mixture becomes permitted because the minority is nullified in the majority, or sometimes we need a bit more than that, more than the majority. But the Mishnah says over here that the forbidden loaves of bread will never become permitted, regardless of how many permitted breads are mixed in within in that mixture. Because the whole concept of nullification doesn't apply to significant things. So loaves of bread are considered to be too significant in themselves for them just to be nullified in a mixture. And now Rabbi Eliezer comes up with a solution. Rabbi Eliezer says, if you've got all these loaves which are really permitted, just one forbidden one got mixed up with them, what you could do is, yolich hana'a liyam ha-melach. You can throw the benefit, the value of the benefit of the loaves of bread, which are forbidden, into the Dead Sea. So let's say you had one loaf of bread which was mixed into the mixture, and that loaf of bread was worth 20 shekel. You should take 20 shekel, throw it into the Dead Sea so that nobody will benefit from that. And it's a sort of redemption of Avodah Zarah, and then the rest of the entire mixture will be permitted. Amrulai, the Chacham said to Rabbi Eliezer, what are you talking about? In Pidyon Avodah Zarah, we don't find a concept of redemption, of being able to transfer the status of the Avodah Zarah onto something else. There is such a concept for certain laws, but we never found such a law regarding Avodah Zarah, and therefore that is not a solution, and it will be forbidden to benefit still from the entire mixture of loaves. Next, Notel Himin Akarkar. If somebody took a small chip of wood from an asherah tree, and this piece of wood was used by weavers to separate out the various threads, of course, also b'hano, it's forbidden to benefit from it because it came from an asherah tree. What happens if you use that tool in order to weave, and orag b'es habeged, you weaved a whole garment using that, habeged osur b'hano, it is forbidden to benefit from that piece of clothing. And once again, it's orav achirim if that item of clothing gets mixed up with other permitted items of clothing, and even if then, from that mixture, some items of clothing from that mixture fall into a different mixture, v'achirim v'achirim, they get mixed up with other permitted clothes, and so on and so forth, kulon asur b'hana, they are all forbidden to benefit from, because the concept of bittul, of something being nullified in a much larger mixture, is only with insignificant things, but if things like an item of clothing is too significant for it to be nullified. Once again, Rabbi Eliezer says we have a solution, yilchana liyam ha-melach. You're able to throw the value, the benefit, which we measure by the value of the forbidden item, you throw that into the Dead Sea, and it will be permitted to benefit from all of the clothing in the mixture. But Omruloi, the Chacham said to him, Ein pidin l'Avodah Zarah, we do not find any concept of redemption, of transferring the status of the Avodah Zarah onto something else.